And welcome back to another episode of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside my always great co-host, Jonah Tools. And we have a slam action-packed show for you guys today. But first, of course, I have to check on my main man, Jonah. Jonah, how's everything going today?
Everything's going great. Hometown Texas Tech Red Raiders beat the number one overall in the country, Paul on college. Hey, go Red Raiders, wreck them. Beat number one in the nation. Big ups to those guys.
Of course, you have to incorporate Texas Tech somehow, some way, just because that is your alma mater, of course. But we have an action-packed show for you guys today. And this is going to be one of my favorite episodes that we have ever done, just because there's a bunch of interesting topics. And, you know, we came up with this a bit on the fly. And that seems to always make the best subjects or topics for debate, just because you get quick fire thoughts. And these are some of the hottest topics going on right now. So in the first segment, we'll talk about Jordan Love, the quarterback from Utah State, who just declared for the draft late last night. We're gonna compare each other's notes on him and just what we think as a whole. If he should have went the grad transfer route, or did he make the correct decision coming out for the 2020 NFL draft? So that's what we'll talk about in the first segment. And then we're getting to the point where we're getting to these bowl games. We're not quite to the New Year Six yet, of course, just because that happens after the New Year. But you're going to see some of these athletes or prospects, I should say, that have futures in the NFL. They're going to start to pull out of these bowl games just because they want to avoid a Jalen Smith type of situation, just prevent these injuries, just because they want to protect their investment and they don't want to risk any type of injury. So we're going to talk about our thoughts on these prospects skipping bowl games. And it hasn't become very apparent yet with the big name, but I'm sure there's going to be some names that are already surfacing and eventually going to come up as far as skipping these bowl games. And then a very interesting topic that we're going to get into the last segment of the show. We're going to take the thinking cap as far as we're the hottest head coach in the country and every single job in the country is open. And we're going to rank the best head coaching vacancies. And what I mean by that is, so let's say we are Nick Saban and we're a free agent and we can pick any school in the country that we want to work for or engineer. So the schools that we're going to rank are Ohio State, Alabama, Texas, USC, and Clemson. Those are the five vacancies that we have on the table right now. And we're going to rank them 1 through 5 of the vacancies that we would take first from the ones we desire the most to the one that is least desirable. So that's a fun topic that we're going to get into in the last half of the show. But first, we're going to start this thing off with Jordan Love. He's a highly debated quarterback right now, probably one of, outside of Joe Burrow, and two, of course, I think he's probably that third guy that has been debated the most. And I think he's been debated more than Justin Herbert to this point, just because I think we know what Justin Herbert has to offer at this point. But what Jordan Love showed from 2018 to this season, It really left a lot to be desired. And I say that just because, you know, everyone knows about the 17 touchdowns and 16 interceptions compared to last year where he threw 32 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. So there was a steep drop off. And I'm going to save my thoughts on this just because I want to get your thoughts on him overall as a prospect first. And would you rather have seen him transfer to a Texas Tech? Of course, I'm sure you're going to say Texas Tech first. Or somewhere like Oklahoma, even though they do have Spencer Rattler already. But I think that would have been a good fit if Rattler wasn't there. Rattler is the reigning number one quarterback in the country, high school recruit. So Oklahoma might not have been a great fit as far as a personnel standpoint. But schematically, I thought that really could have been a good fit for him. But he elected to come out and enter the 2020 draft. So just your overall thoughts on Love first as a prospect. And would you have rather seen him take the grad transfer route as opposed to declaring for the draft?
Yeah, I think there are two schools of thought here. I think when you talk about him improving his game overall, I think of course you'd like to see him go back for another year and learn under like a Lincoln Riley or go back to Matt Wells at Texas Tech, for example. I think just for his overall game just to develop, I think he needs a year. And we both agree on this. We think he's going to need a redshirt year in the NFL, whether it's behind an established quarterback like a Kirk Cousins or a guy, you know, like Indianapolis, for example, Jacoby Brissett could be a good bridge quarterback for him. So I think he's going to need a redshirt year in the NFL regardless. So I think developmental-wise, of course, we wanted him to go the grad transfer route just selfishly to see him get better as a quarterback prospect itself. But at the same time, I think in terms of the draft decision-making and his draft stock, and I know it's kind of weird to say because statistically, this wasn't one of his best years, but I don't think he's going to – I just don't know how he's going to really improve on his draft stock at Utah State. I think he's kind of – just maxed out at Utah State. And if he wasn't going to go the grad transfer route, he had to go the NFL draft route because his potential at Utah State was already maxed out. And I think he's going – if he sees himself being a first-round pick, which we both project him to be at this point, considering this quarterback class, Tua's uncertainty, the questions around Herbert, some team's going to pull the trigger on Love in the top 30. And when you're a quarterback and you can make that much money right now, right then, I don't know how you can really knock his decision for entering the NFL this early. I mean, if you can see yourself as a first-round pick, you got to go out all day long. I don't knock him for declaring because that's where he's being projected all around right now. That's where I think he'll end up going. So, like I said, two schools of thought. If you wanted to see him develop better as a prospect, of course you want to see him go the grad transfer route. But in terms of his, you know, in terms of financially making money right now, you can't knock his decision whatsoever.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I 110% agree that he made the correct decision. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as, you know, him maxing out his value as opposed to, you know, or compared to what he did last year, compared to this year. I think he's pretty much done all he could for that offense. And here's my exact thoughts on Jordan Love. So everyone knows about the 32 touchdowns to 8 interceptions compared to 17 touchdowns to 16 interceptions this year. And if you just look strictly at the box score with him, he is not going to be for you. And if you just look at his stats completely, the 17 touchdowns and 16 interceptions, that's something that's going to be talked about endlessly with him just because he took a bit of a step back this year. But you have to understand that he lost his top five targets. Darwin Thompson was the running back, was one guy that he relied a lot upon last year. He was the main weapon for them. But also he had to inherit a completely different coaching staff as well. So just fighting against those variables. And then he just didn't have any weapons on the perimeter. And if you're just looking at some of these games, I know they come on at late at night for us here on the East Coast. But if you're looking at some of these games for him, you're just noticing just how hard it was for him. He was fighting an uphill battle with all these drops. He didn't have any weapons on the perimeter. And his situation reminds me a lot of Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming. And ironically, it really is. It's in the same conference, the Mountain West. And if you remember coming out, Josh Allen, accuracy was a big thing with him. And just he didn't have the accuracy that you were looking for, but he had the big arm. And I think him and Love are a bit different as far as prospects, but I'm just comparing their situation, just the surroundings that they had. I don't think it was the best for them as far as schematically and how they did fit into the personnel-wise, and they had to fight an uphill battle, and it reflected against them negatively, and I think that's something that happened with Jordan Love this year, and he made some boneheaded decisions, but you talk about some of the traits that he does flash. The arm strength is amazing. Some of the things that he does show, some of the throws that he makes are just incredible. And that's something that's always going to intrigue scouts just because even though he was in a really bad situation, he was able to overcome some of those things with some of these incredible throws. And whenever a guy has this uberly talented arm, it is always going to intrigue scouts and evaluators just because arm strength is the one thing that they always feel like they can't teach. But you can revolve their game around a lot of that arm strength, and that's exactly what you see with Jordan Love. And I'm a big fan of Jordan Love, and I'll go ahead and put that out there. I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if he ends up being a top 15 selection just because everyone knows that these quarterbacks are going to be stacked differently. And I know everybody has Joe Burrow at the top as far as a draft Twitter community, but there's going to be some teams that have Justin Herbert at the top, Tua, and there may be one team out there that has Jordan Love at the top. And I'm not saying there will be an exact team out there, but the team that I love his fit on is the Indianapolis Colts. And that seems to be a common consensus in mock drafts right now just because it's a team that's in need of a quarterback. And I know the jury might kind of still be out on Jacoby Brissett, but, I mean, let's just be honest. I think Jordan Love, as far as, you know, an intangible standpoint and then what he brings to the table from an arm talent type of situation, I think if far exceeds what Jacoby Brissett can bring to the table. And you talk about coupling him with a guy like Frank Reich, and then you already have Brissett in the building. He just signed a two-year extension, so you have your bridge gap guy in place with him, so you don't have to rush Love. And that's exactly that redshirt year that you were talking about with him. So I really like his fit in Indianapolis. And there's some other spots as well. We could talk about Green Bay potentially being a spot for him as well. I think that could be a really good landing spot behind Aaron Rodgers whenever he decides to hang it up. New Orleans is another fit that I like for him a lot as well. So it's really going to be interesting to see how the NFL does evaluate him. But you talk about a guy that has a lot hanging on his Senior Bowl status, and I think he's gonna end up accepting his invitation here very, very soon, just because I think he can only help himself, just because it's an event that can help him out a lot, just because he can show off some of those intangibles and some of that arm strength that he does. And the arm talent, the ball's going to jump out of his hand, and it's going to be amazing down at the Senior Bowl. So he's going to have some of the best targets that he's ever thrown to, and possibly pretty much ever he's thrown to in his career. And we know how talented the receiving roster is down at the Senior Bowl. So I'm really excited to see him down there if he doesn't end up accepting his invitation. But I think you hit the nail on the head as far as him needing a redshirt year, but him making the correct decision coming out. Did you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, and I'm just going to touch on what you mentioned with Utah State. He had a whole new coaching staff, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, let's keep in mind, the whole coaching staff went to Texas Tech in Lubbock. And, you know, for a young quarterback how, you know, troubling that can be, you know, adjusting. So, like, I think a lot of the statistical regression came from that. More so that I think the supporting cast. I know he lost Darwin Thompson, Dax Raymond, and a lot of those guys. But at the same time, that when you lose a coaching staff that young of your development of your developmental career, that's gonna mean a lot. And you know, I wonder just on the field, you know, this guy has all the traits to make all the throws. But you know, and I've learned my mistakes from this, because I was really high on DeShone Kizer when he came out of the draft. And I'm not saying Jordan Love's end up being DeShone Kizer, because Kizer obviously didn't work out for the Browns and of course the Packers, but you see the same kind of thing where, you know, you can make all the throws, but he's making some really bonehead decisions sometimes. And yeah, it really kind of overshadows his talent. And that's what happened with Kizer. Kizer just couldn't really consistently put together, you know, a good, you know, full game of tape, you know, even last year at Notre Dame, it ended up working out in the NFL. But I mean, that's what I'm worried about, because you see all these traits, you see this talent, you see all of that, you can make all the throws. I've been lured in by these quarterbacks that make bad decisions. Like, I've been lured in by DeShone Kizer. I've been lured in by Sam Darnold coming out of USC. So I'm a little scared to go all in on Jordan Love, because I see those same aspects of Darnold and Kizer that I missed on a little bit. I'm not saying I missed on Darnold. Yeah, Darnold still has a long ways to go, I think, with the Jets. I don't think he's going to go anywhere with Adam Gase, but that's a whole different story. But at the same time, I understand that I've missed on quarterbacks in the past that have, you know, all the traits and all the – they can make all the throws, but they make bad decisions. They don't really have, you know, nuance in the pocket to really make good decisions. I'm a little hesitant on Love, and that's why I won't be as high on Love as the rest of the TDN staff. But at the same time, I do recognize that his upside is well worth it for a team that has an established quarterback, like a Los Angeles Chargers with Phillip Rivers, like Indianapolis Colts with the Bridge, like Jacoby Brissett, or even possibly the Patriots with Tom Brady in the first round. You know, it's one of those things where I can see a team with a veteran quarterback taking him and redshirting him for a year or two.
So my entire objective now at the Senior Bowl, I just wrote this down, is to make you a firm believer in Jordan Love. I'm going to do that at the Senior Bowl, because once you see him throw the football, you're going to be like,
man. You very well might. And I'll tell you this right now. You could tell whenever I went to the Senior Bowl 2 years ago when Josh Allen threw the ball.
Yeah.
He absolutely separated himself from the rest of the pack. When you just watch his tape, and there's a big thing, and scouts will tell you this. And I've talked to plenty of scouts that have told me this directly. You can't evaluate a quarterback truly until you watch them in person, because of how you can just see the zip on the ball. And that's why I'm with Josh Allen. I wasn't a big fan of his Wyoming tape personally, but watching him at the Senior Bowl, he separated himself with the zip he put on those passes, and you just knew that NFL arm talent was going to get him through. And that guy was going to – I knew right then and there that he was going to be like a top 10 pick right there. And I thought that he was going to have success in the next level because of how he performed in Mobile. So Jordan Love can do the same exact thing, kind of the same big pre-draft cycle. And so I really can't wait to see his arm talent live. But at the same time, I've been fooled by these guys in the past, so I'm a little hesitant on him.
And there's no problem with that at all. But like I said, my objective is to make you a Jordan Love believer by the time we exit the Senior Bowl. So I'm really excited to, you know, dive into his tape more this year. I've already seen pretty much all of his games from this year as far as watching it live on the TV. But as far as going back and watching the All-22, I've only done about 3 or 4 games with that so far. So Jordan Love definitely will be a highly debated topic. But before we move on, I want to remind our listeners about DoorDash. You can treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Listening on the go, if you can't visit DoorDash right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. That again, if you can't visit DoorDash right now, you can find all of this and other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers and entering the promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON. All right, so moving on to our next topic, and this is another one that I can't wait to get your thoughts on as well. And we're getting to the bowls. We're actually firmly in the middle of bowl season, I should say, or at the beginning stages of bowl season here in the coming weeks, I should say. And we're getting to the point where we're starting to see athletes and even underclassmen start to declare for the NFL draft. And we always know what comes with that is they're skipping bowl games. We've already seen some of the names come out and say they're going to skip their bowl games. C.J. Henderson is one name that comes to mind. He already said he's not going to play in the bowl game. There's going to be plenty of others that come out and say the same thing as well. We've seen highly touted prospects in the past come out and say the same thing as well, just because they want to avoid a Jalen Smith type of situation. But the great thing for Jalen is that he was able to recover and get the big money deal. But sometimes some of these other athletes are unable to do that as well. So it's a risky proposition, but I always say you are what you are at the point of the bowl game. And they have plenty of games with tape on you. As long as you're not a player that's in the college football playoff and you're skipping out trying to win a national championship, seeking your pro career. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's going to be a major red flag. But if you're playing in the Dollar General Bowl and you're projected to be a first-round selection, I just don't see any need for you to play in that, just because your stock already is what it is at that point from a playing perspective and what you have already put on film. So I don't really have a problem with these guys skipping these bowl games. What about you?
I'm 100% with you there. If you're a top prospect and you're playing in, you know, the Tax Slayer Bowl or the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl or the Gas Station Bowl or whatever it is, you should not be playing. You should not be playing because it's not worth it. If you're a top – now, I will amend this. If you are a mid-round – if you are not like a slam dunk first or second-round pick, you're like a late day two, day three guy, go play the game because it's another game of tape for you to stand out. But I'm saying, like, if you're like, you know, like a Isaiah Simmons, you know, that's probably a pass, not a bad example, but like if you're like a Najee Harris at Alabama,
yeah,
you're like a like
Andrew Thomas or DeAndre Swift or somebody like
Xavier McKinney, Prince Tegawanogo, you know what I mean, these guys that are ready to go or ready to play right now. You know, it's just like, but if you're a mid-round guy, if you're a guy that's, like, not really on the draft radar, for example, like, you know, I'm trying to think of a name, but, like, if you're not really on the radar, if it's someone that your name hasn't really been buzzing and you skip a bowl game, then that might be a red flag, honestly, just because, like, you know, do you not want to put up another game on tape? Is that you're trying to hide something from a scout? You know what I mean? Like, I know how scouts think, and scouts think that if you skip a bowl game, you're trying to hide something, or you don't want to play. That's not the case for a lot of these top guys. Christian McCaffrey skipped a bowl game, everyone praises his competitiveness. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a top prospect, don't play. Unless you're in the college football playoff, it doesn't matter. Don't play the Gas Station Bowl or whatever it is. But if you're a mid-round, late-round, absolutely go and play the game. I mean, especially if you're a senior, I know, like, a lot of these seniors, you know, they'll wait for the Senior Bowl, whatever, you know, but just go play the game, put another game of tape on, because you're not a top guy. You're not a guarantee. Put another game on tape to separate yourself from scouts. Now, I will say this. Coaches that bash players for skipping bowl games are hypocritical, because you look at a lot of these coaching hires, and a lot of them skip the bowl games.
Yeah. So they go to the next job. Great point.
Florida State Seminoles. Your Florida State Seminoles with Mike Norvell with Memphis. He's skipping the Cotton Bowl or what the bowl they're in for Memphis. It's the biggest bowl game like in Memphis history. He's skipping it.
Right.
So, like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, when I see coaches, we've seen it every year. Coaches bash prospects for skipping games, seniors, juniors, whoever it may be. I remember, I think it was D'Antonio was, like, very, like, I don't know, like, he bashed guys like Justin Lane for skipping the Michigan State bowl game last year. But I think when you look at coaches, when they get hired by a new program, they'll skip those bowl games. So I think it's really hypocritical for coaches to blame those guys. But when in terms of, you know, I'm just going back to this point. If you're a top guy, don't play. If you're not, then why not play? I mean, it's another game of tape for you to separate yourself.
Man, I could not have said it better myself, especially with how some of these head coaches jump from job to job, and even Eli Drinkwitz from Appalachian State jumping over to the next job at Missouri. That's another great example as well, a team that's coming off another Sun Belt Conference championship, and now he's not even going to be there for the team's bowl game. So that was a great example for you to use. And do you remember Laich Seastrunk, the running back from Baylor. Couple of years ago?
Absolutely.
He's a track guy. Great example of a player that should have played in the bowl game, and it really hurt his draft stock just because he thought he was a top-round guy for whatever reason, and he did not go out there and play, and it tanked his draft stock after that, and he's a guy that flamed out in the league very quickly as a result, just because it created a negative image about him, even though he had a productive career at Baylor. So if you're a day two or day three guy, there's no reason why you shouldn't be out there during these bowl games. But if you're a bona fide first round guy, there's no reason for you to play if you're not playing the college football.
It's very dangerous for these players because, you know, they listen to talk from either agents or just under the table talk, terrible info. And that's the last thing you want for these prospects, because this is a life changing decision. Now, I mean, you come back for your senior year, you get an education and whatnot, but like, if you go to the NFL early like that and you're not going to get drafted, man, that's a monumental decision. It is terrible info from a lot of agents that, you know, act like they know something when they actually don't. And that's when it gets into a real issue. And I've seen, you know, big draft people talk about bad agents before, and it's 100% true. I mean, these agents will feed you bad info. So if you're a player, you know, on the brink of should I declare or not, make sure you have good info and good verified info on where you're projected to be drafted.
Definitely. So just make sure if you're an athlete out there listening to the podcast, make sure you're listening to the right people and you have the right people in your ear, just because this is a life-changing decision for you. You only get to make this decision one time, just because you can only get drafted one time. So just make sure you're making the correct decision. And if you're on the fence about it, just go ahead and play. That's the biggest thing I can say about that, just because if you do go out there and play, there isn't anything bad that can happen. Of course, there's an injury that can happen, but as far as a draft stock perspective, I don't think there's anything that could hurt you by playing in that game. So it's really an interesting topic, and Christian McCaffrey is another great example that you used that hit the nail on the head as far as a player that did skip the bowl game but still ended up being a top 10 top 10 draft selection. So there's going to be some other players in the coming weeks that end up skipping these bowl games. And of course, there's going to be guys that come out of the woodworks saying that they quit on the team and they should finish the season with their guys just because that's who they started with. But I'm all for these guys skipping bowl games and protecting their bodies and protecting their investment, just because I'm all about the players getting their money and what they fully deserve, just because they worked their butts off for these 3 to 4 years, however long they stayed in college, and they deserve to make the most money as they can, just because they can't get any type of profitability from the NCAA, of course, which is another topic that we'll get into. We'll save that for another
day. Absolutely. And let me ask you this. Do you think Jalen Smith would like a redo on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. So, like, when people, I think, criticize these players, they have so much tunnel vision in mind that they don't realize that these players are putting millions of dollars at risk. I've just seen Jalen Smith get hurt like that. And now Jalen Smith got the big money. But this guy would have been a top five pick. This guy might have been like one of the first, like two or three, you know, best players in that draft if he not gotten hurt. And that cost him a lot of money in his rookie contract. So that's money he'll never be able to get back, regardless of what contract he made in Dallas. So when players saw that Jalen Smith thing happen, I think, you know, it's undoubtedly that was the trend that started this bowl game skipping deal. And I will never blame a player if they're ready, if they are one of these guys that we know is going to be a high draft pick. I will never blame them for skipping a game, because their pro career, they're valuing their financial future and their pro career over a meaningless bowl game that does not have any postseason implications. I'm all for it. But like I said, if you're a Lake Seastrunk story of Baylor, then just play the game. If you're on the fence, play the game. If you're not a notable draft prospect, just play it, because it gives another game of tape for you to separate yourself from in the eyes of scouts. Because if you're not a top 100 guy, then you're going to need something to separate yourself to get drafted. And this bowl game is just another game against good competition that you can use. But if you're a Christian McCaffrey, Derek Brown, some of these top guys, of course, don't play. It's that simple.
Right. And it's going to be a topic that comes up here in the coming weeks. I'm already calling it, just because there's going to be people on both sides of the debate, but everybody knows what side of the debate we are on. As far as athletes or prospects, I should say, skipping these bowl games and protecting their investment. So before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Once we come back from the break, we will debate and rank our top head coaching vacancies as if every single job in the country was open. All right, and we are back. And this is a topic that we thought of on the fly. And I'm proud of myself for this one just because we're always thinking of topics to come up with just because before the bowl season, I should say, starts, it's kind of a dead period in a sense. There's not really a lot going on besides underclassmen declarations and also postseason all-star games. As far as invitations being accepted, that's really the only thing going on right now. But the most highly debated topic in the country right now is all these head coaches jumping from job to job all over the place. We've already seen Lane Kiffin accept the job at Ole Miss, and we've seen some other ones as well. Mike Norvell from Memphis to Florida State is another one that has been highly debated as well. But we're going to take a bit of a different approach with this. So it's kind of a fantasy draft in a sense. And what I mean by that is we're going to talk about each job as if they are vacant. And there's no coaches in the country that are employed right now, but we're going to talk about five of the top jobs in the country and how we would rank them if we were somebody like Urban Meyer, who is unemployed right now, but as far as not in a head coaching seat. And we're going to rank which job we would take. So the five schools that we're going to debate are Ohio State, Alabama, Texas, USC, and Clemson. So we're going to go from bottom up. So, with that being said, Jonah, who is your fifth school that you would take?
Man, and this is so tough because each of these schools that we laid out for us to pick from are all, I mean, the premier options in college football, right? So it's hard to say this team is last because there are so many reasons that, I mean, a coin flip and this team would be number one on my list, right? These teams are all premier programs. So I did a little different. I did not, like, obviously, like, Alabama, with all the current recruit stats that Nick Saban built up, all that, they would probably be number one for most people. But for me, like, you know, it's like I just look differently, more so like generalized programs: Ohio State, USC, Texas, Alabama, Clemson, those schools, whatever it is. I generalize those programs, and for me, the fifth of those is Clemson. And the reason why, it doesn't have the prestige of the other schools, like Ohio. When you think of like Alabama, you think just, you know, the football tradition Nick Saban's built up. Texas football, you can't beat that. USC, what Pete Carroll did with those boys. Even go back all the way back to O.J. Simpson back in the 70s. You're talking about Ohio State with Archie Griffin, the only two-time Heisman winner. There's just so much prestige and tradition of those schools. And I'm not saying Clemson doesn't have that, but it's more recent than those. The history is more vast than other schools. And to me, if you're picking, you know, a school that is in general a program that I would love to – I'd rather pick those more history-rich schools and programs than Clemson. Even though Clemson's going to have obviously some of the best talent and recruiting pools out there in the South, in the Southeast, and the ACC is not a daunting division or a daunting conference to play in. I mean, Clemson has steamrolled through the ACC for years, so that'll be a destination where you think you could win, you can recruit, and you can really build a program like Dabo has over there. So Clemson, even though they're my fifth option, they are definitely one of the premier schools to go to, premier programs to build on.
Great explanation, and you almost made me change my answer, but I'm going to stick with my fifth school, and this may come as a bit of a surprise. So my fifth school is Alabama.
And I almost did this as well.
If I was a head coach, and I'm a very competitive individual, but if I was a head coach, I would want no parts of the SEC just because it is extremely competitive. And you have to go through Georgia, LSU, all of those teams every year. And you have to think about Alabama prior to what Nick Saban was. And I'm not even going back to the Bear Bryant days. And I'm talking about going back to those days prior to Nick Saban. Alabama was not a school that a lot of people desired to go to just because you had to go through LSU every year. And LSU was just stomping Alabama every single year prior to when Nick Saban got there. And Saban actually was at LSU doing a lot of the dirty stuff too. Alabama during his time there, even winning the national championship. So as a head coach, I wouldn't want any parts of the SEC. And I'm just thinking of Alabama before pre-Nick Saban, I should say. So Alabama will be my fifth school, even though it is probably one of the richest traditions ever in college football. But I'm just thinking of it prior to what Nick Saban was before he got there. So Alabama would be my fifth school. So moving on to your fourth school, we're going to keep this thing going. Who is your fourth school?
Yeah, I got Alabama. You, I'm glad me and you are on the same approach on this, is that we're thinking Alabama prior Saban. And if we're talking about right now fulfilling these spots, who on earth would want to replace, be the guy to follow in the footsteps of Nick Saban, arguably the greatest college coach of all time? No matter how good you do at Alabama, you're going to be viewed as a failure.
Right.
Comparatively to Nick Saban. You can win 3 national championships in a row, you still won't be Nick Saban.
Right.
I love Alabama's tradition. I love how when you go to Alabama, or even like anywhere in the Southeast, it's Alabama Crimson Tide, Roll Tide. I love that tradition over there. I love how Alabama is just a football, like, just it's the aura of Alabama football is just so awesome to see now. And no matter where you go in the Southeast, it's always about that Roll Tide. And I love that you got all the, you got great recruiting base down there. So of course you're going to be able to, you would be able to sustain Alabama's success. I believe, I think Alabama is probably the one school on this list that I probably most confident I can sustain like the talent pool there. But I will say this, you made a great point about this. I think the talent I will sustain, but the records, I don't know, because the SEC is so freaking tough. Whether it's LSU or an Auburn, you know, once a year, or you got Georgia potentially in the SEC championship, you know, or Florida, for example, it's going to be hard to make the college football playoff year in and year out like Nick Saban has done. So I love the tradition, love the talent pool down there, love the whole Alabama Roll Tide over there. But at the same time, winning and following Nick Saban, that's why it's fourth on my list.
Good luck following whoever has to follow in Nick Saban's shoes. You're in my prayers. And it's kind of like following in Bill Belichick's shoes with the New England Patriots.
Absolutely.
You're just in my prayers.
Who would want that job? My goodness.
You're going to be seen as a failure no matter what you do. So we had ours flip-flopped. I have Clemson at number 4. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as what you talked about them earlier and just how their tradition really is what Dabo has built there for the most part. And I know they've had great players in years past, but Clemson has hit its peak in what it is now. It has not been in recent memory. And if you think about the ACC, Clemson isn't one of the first teams that comes to mind. As far as the history of the ACC, you talk about Florida State, Miami. Those are really the two schools that come to mind as far as being or running that conference for the most part in its story history. And Clemson really is the team running it now, and it's pretty much a doormat for everybody. For them, as far as, you know, besides Clemson, they're just running through the ACC every single year. They've gone undefeated the past few years. So Clemson, and they don't really have a rich tradition prior to Dabo Swinney. And I keep saying they had really good players prior to that, but they hadn't won a national championship since 1981 before they won it in 2016, I believe it was. So that just goes to show you the type of gap that they had and disparity that was really accustomed in the ACC. So Clemson was my fourth school. Moving on to the top 3 now, and this is where it gets really interesting, and I think this is where we could have our orders a bit different. So who is your third school?
Dude, this is the toughest thing, because when you talk about Ohio State, USC, and Texas, you can make a legit argument. Like, I could change my answer tomorrow. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
Each of these, like, I think to me the clear bottom two were Alabama and Clemson, and that's really weird to say because those are the two premier programs in the country right now. But to me, it was these three programs, Ohio State, USC, and Texas, that were so hard to separate. So I'm going to be really fascinated to see where you stand on this. Because for me, number 3 is Ohio State. And I love that it was like the Ohio State. That is that Ohio State football, the Buckeyes, the pride stickers on the helmets. You know, they don't have a logo. It's just their helmets full of those stickers, and you earn it. And the rich tradition they've had for years and years and years. You know, Ohio State's just like always been good. They've always been that prestige program. But for me, what separates it is that I don't know if I'll be able to sustain the talent pool over there. And I just don't believe the talent pool is as rich as a state like Texas or a state like California in the Midwest like that. And I know a lot of big-time players have come out of there in recent years. But for me, the big separator for me is I think I'll be able to recruit better at Texas and USC rather than Ohio State, despite how much prestige Ohio State's built. And I love Ohio State. make Ohio State number one tomorrow if I change my mind, because they said, but this is the tradition. Texas and USC, it's just slightly better than Ohio State, and that's what gives it the edge.
Really good explanation, and I think you're spot on as far as your order can change for any of these three, just because all three of them have great pros and cons associated with them. But my third team, I went with Texas, and here's why. I think the way the programs that have been ran at Texas A&M, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma, I think it has made recruiting really hard for Texas. And even though they get a lot of these five-star recruits, I think talent development has been one of the biggest things that Texas has lacked for the most part. And Mack Brown, I mean, he's a legend there at Texas, and he's another guy that they have really struggled to replace since he has left there a few years ago. So I'm a huge fan of the story tradition from, you know, Vince Young to Ricky Williams and Colt McCoy and all the legends that they have had there. But these other two, they're just more appealing jobs to me for the most part. And I think from a recruiting standpoint and the story tradition, I think the tradition is a bit more rich than what is at Texas. So before we move on to get to our last two schools in USC and Ohio State, I want to say we're going to take another quick break. All right, and we are back. And for those of you that may just be tuning in or maybe a little bit lost on what we are discussing right now, we are discussing or ranking our top head coaching vacancies as if every head coaching job in the country was available. So the five schools we are ranking, we have already ranked Texas, Clemson, and Alabama. We are on our final two schools and USC and Ohio State. So with that being said, I'm, of course, going to let you go first just because I cannot wait to see how you have these two schools ordered. Who is it with your second spot with Ohio State and USC?
Actually, okay, so I had Ohio State third.
So for you, it's USC and Texas.
Yeah, so I had Clemson five because I think their tradition is not on par with the other four. So I think that was an easy decision for me. Number four is Alabama because I don't want to fall in the footsteps of Nick Saban. And number three is Ohio State because I feel like you and I will defer on this. I think the tradition at Texas and USC, those are the two premier programs, I think, in the entire college football, you know, in the entire country. I think those are the cream of the crop, Texas and USC. For me, the number two team, and we're going to disagree. We might disagree on this because obviously you had them third, but I got Texas. I got Texas at number two. And the reason why they're not number one is exactly why you mentioned. Recruiting in Texas has changed so much. And now you got to compete with Oklahoma, who has built a premier program in its own right, great tradition in its own right as well. But you also got other great programs as well, like Texas A&M. They join the SEC. You're going to have a lot of people join their program. The Texas Tech has become a much better recruiting school as well in recent years. So Texas, I think the recruiting appeal of Texas has kind of gone down a little bit. But, man, that tradition over there, if you can turn Texas around, the talent pool is going to be there. I think Texas is still the most appealing. Texas is still the name that makes it, you know, the Hook'em Horns there, the tradition there. Since the 1940s, man, it's just been so big. It's Texas football, man. You know, Texas high school football is so big over here. If you can turn around the Longhorns, you'll be viewed as a legend. You get the stadium named after you, damn it, if you turn the school around. So I hurt me not to put Texas number one. The reason why I think it's the biggest risk reward on this entire list. If you don't perform in your first year, expectations are Texas. But if you take them to the national championship, you'll get a statue. Statue or fired, I think Texas probably is my number two team on this list, despite me thinking that they have a legit shot to be number one. You know, I could change my mind tomorrow if I wanted, but Texas, man, that is the premier program, I think, in the country. But there's other aspects of USC that put them over top, and I'll explain that later.
Definitely, man. I'm a huge fan of Texas. I love everything that they stand for. I think they have some of the best colors and all of college football and their history
is beautiful, man. Iconic.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, from the logo to, you know, the sign that they have, Hook'em Horns, everything is, I mean, it just gives you chills watching them play.
I think that's the best fan base, I think, in college football, too.
Yeah, I agree.
I think in terms of, like, loyal, like, if you turn around that program, dude, you'll be viewed as a legend for a century. I mean, yeah. you'll be like the Julius Caesar of Austin, Texas. I mean, come on, it'll be like, if you turn, I'm telling you, whoever turns that program around is gonna be viewed as a god. I mean, right. It's gonna be crazy.
Man, I mean, Texas is such a big state. It's like its own country down there, man. So,
absolutely.
I mean, the support is just phenomenal down there. But my second school is Ohio State. And the only reason that it is not number one, and I'll go ahead and say this, is location. That's the only reason that it's not number one for me.
Number three for me.
That's why USC is number one. Ohio State is number two, is location. And I mean, we can go ahead and get into our top choice, which is USC. And I don't want to disrespect Ohio State or anything like that. I think as talent and, you know, the coaches that they have produced, from Urban Meyer to
top three.
And we talk about a team with storied tradition and a rich history. Ohio State definitely has that, and it's still going to this day. It essentially has become a feeder system, just like it has in recent years for talent into the NFL. So Ohio State has a rich tradition as well. You know, the Buckeye, what it stands for, the prize stickers that they have on the helmet, the glossy silver helmets, you know, the eye-popping red, candy apple red that they have there. So everything about it is just awesome. But USC, man, the location, the tradition that they have, this is a school that I grew up, I don't want to say loving, just because we both know I'm a Florida State fan. But when NCAA was back out, the NCAA football video game, Reggie Bush, Lindell White, Matt Leinart, Mike Williams, I mean, those guys were unstoppable on the game, man. And they made me a big fan of playing with USC on the game. And just everything about it, from the fight song to the location to, you know, where it's everything that it stands for, and just the rich history that it has, the players that have been through and come out of the program speak for itself. And it just doesn't get better than Southern California, man. You couldn't ask for a better job, making millions of dollars and being able to, you know, coach football. So USC definitely is my number one choice.
Oh, I'm 100% with you there. Well, USC to me was number one, and it's close. I think to me it was this top three and then the 4-5, but really to me it was between USC and Texas. So I think those are the two most rich tradition programs in the country. I mean, you could probably throw Notre Dame in there as well, but I mean, USC and Texas to me, in terms of location, tradition, you know, all that, the history, everything, the fan base, those are my top two for sure. And the reason why USC gets the edge, I feel more comfortable recruiting in California than I do in Texas today. And California, USC's appeal in recruiting is still alive today as it was 30 years ago, my friend. Modern day high school, you grab the best quarterback from there. USC can grab the best quarterback from the West, and usually the best quarterback prospects come from the West Coast. If USC won the top quarterback prospect every year going out of high school, they could get them. And there are a couple of programs in college football that should never be bad in terms of talent pool. USC is absolutely one of those schools. They should be the top recruiting school of the West Coast
year in and year out.
Their tradition, you know, going back to like O.J. Simpson days to, you know, Pete Carroll with Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and those guys with those big seasons for the Trojans, the fight song, USC. There's so much rich history with USC, and it's in a perfect location. Who wouldn't want to go play in Southern California, man? I'm telling you. And that's why the appeal of USC is so good to me. I would love to be able to, you know, restore USC back to, you know, the victorious days like the Pete Carrolls, Reggie Bush, and all of that, man. It's, you know, the legacy, the potential, everything about USC to me is like, it's like a perfect program for me to go to right now. And so if I had my option of all these five schools, USC is unequivocally my number one.
Without question. And that's why, like, they retained Clay Helton, which was a bit surprising to a lot of people. But the Urban Meyer rumors made a lot of sense, just because we talk about Ohio State being our second and our third school, respectively. But USC, they had the top spot, living in Southern California, rebuilding that program. I mean, it's pretty hard to turn that down if you're Urban Meyer. So we'll see if he does end up coming back out of his, you know, stay away of his absence away from football. Maybe not this year, but we'll see what does happen with that program next year in 2020, and if he is the top candidate to take over that job if Clay Helton isn't able to get the job done. So really fun topic, man. That was really awesome. That's some of the stuff that we like to add during the midweek podcast, just because there really isn't a whole bunch of topics going on as far as highly debated things that are going on right now in the college football landscape. But those are some of the fun topics that we like to have on the podcast. Really fun topic.
Yeah, and Alex, let our listeners know this. Jordan and I did not discuss our rankings with each other.
We did
the
not.
The fact that they were so similar is so fascinating.
Yeah.
Because we had no discussion about this topic and who our rankings were before we started discussing them. We had no prior discussion about this. So for us to both have USC as the top school and Clemson, Alabama as the consensus bottom two there, is so interesting to me. It just really confirms how our minds work the same way. Whether it's with draft prospects or with college football, man, you and I, Jordan, we think the same exact way, my friend.
Absolutely. And I'm probably going to put out something on Twitter about this tomorrow just because I want to see where a lot of the minds are of the followers. And I think it's going to be a pretty interesting debate. I like to put out a question of the day every once in a while. So that's something that I'll probably do. I'll put up there tomorrow. So keep an eye on that. Of course, this is the Locked On College Football Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Of course, I am Jordan Reed alongside my always great co-host, Jonah Tulls. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Locked On College Football Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review. And we will be back tomorrow, of course, with more interesting topics.